Welcome to God and Country Biblical Exposition. We certainly have a lot to talk about in regard to God and Country, especially as we see the day of the Lord drawing near. In a recent National Review article about the false gospel of Rousseau and the French Revolution, the author compares the Jacobins in the 1790s to the riots in America today, but he makes this statement. Few tasks are so vital today as renewing the moral authority in the churches, unquote. And that's why this program, God and Country, exists, to be just one more voice of the church, the voice of the prophet to this generation. And we must not be silent. We must speak boldly as we ought to speak. Ephesians chapter 6, verse 20. Well, this week, I would like to address this issue of voter fraud. We are in for a major crisis in November, Election Day, November 3rd, and we ought to be prepared for what is coming. A couple of weeks ago, President Trump said at a press conference that usually by the end of the evening on Election Day, we know who the next president will be, but not this year. We're not going to know who the president is for months or even years. Of course, the left-leaning media turned the story into the president will not accept election results. But President Trump was not making this up off the top of his head. All political insiders know, with the push for mail-in voting, this election is going to be a major disaster. There will be delays in ballot counting. Many ballots will be rejected for lack of postmark, bad signatures, failure to fill out the ballot and seal it correctly. States are not set up to handle this many mail-in ballots. And the Democrats and the Republicans now have hundreds of lawyers already on retainer to challenge the results. Let me just give you a few examples of the problems created by mail-in ballots. First story. In Michigan, the state sent mail-in ballots to 7.7 million registered voters in the primary. But the state of Michigan has 225,000 more people listed as registered voters than the state's entire voting age population. In 2016, Donald Trump beat Hillary in Michigan by only 11,000 votes. And yet in this state, there are at least 225,000 mail-in ballots being sent to people that don't even exist. So do you think there might be some cheating to get those extra 11,000 votes? Or to so undermine the system that Michigan cannot declare its results reliable? Absolutely. The Democrats are targeting these swing states to make sure they find some way to get the few extra votes they need or invalidate the results. And realize that in Michigan, as in other states, those 7.7 million ballots being sent out, many of which will be going to wrong addresses, former residents, deceased voters. Second story. In Iowa, a judge ordered an Iowa county to invalidate 50,000 absentee ballot requests because the election commissioner pre-filled out the ballots with the voter information. Names, date of birth, voter identification number, which makes it very easy for the wrong people to use those ballot requests. In Iowa, Trump won by just 147,000 votes. Third story. In Paterson, New Jersey, the courts indicted four men in voter fraud, two councilmen. They were charged with fraud in casting mail-in votes, unauthorized possession of ballots, tampering with public records and falsifying records. And the whole case started with hundreds of uncounted ballots being found in mailboxes. So you wonder if there's voter fraud. Well, it's happening. A fourth story, New York Post. Over 80,000 mail-in ballots disqualified in New York City primary race. Mail-in ballots of more than 84,000 New York City Democrats who sought to vote in the presidential primary were disqualified, according to new figures released by the Board of Elections. The City Board of Election received 403,000 mail-in ballots for the June 23rd Democratic presidential primary. But the certified results released Wednesday revealed that only 319,000 mail-in ballots were counted. That means 84,000 ballots were counted as invalid, 21% of the total. One out of five mail-in ballots were disqualified for arriving late, lacking postmark, or failing to include a voter's signature or other defects. The high invalidation rate provides more proof that election officials and the Postal Service were woefully unprepared to handle and process the avalanche of mail-in ballots that voters were encouraged to fill out to avoid having to go to the polls during the coronavirus pandemic. So imagine that, one-fifth of all the mail-in ballots were invalid. That would definitely change any election results. And that could never happen if people personally show up at the polls. There is some serious election manipulation and voter disenfranchising that can take place with mail-in ballots. Fifth story, CBS did a vote-by-mail test. They sent out 100 mock ballots. Among many problems found in delays, 3% of the ballots did not reach their destination. Conclusion? In a close election, 3% is pivotal, and presidential elections are often won by less than 3%. Another story from the New York Post, confessions of a voter fraud. I was a master at fixing mail-in ballots. And this story is repeated on all the conservative news sites. I didn't hear a peep about this story from CNN or the other mainstream media. From PJ Media, incredible Democrat operative reveals how he fixed mail-in ballots over decades. A man described by the New York Post as a top Democratic operative and a Bernie Sanders supporter told the newspaper he had been submitting thousands of fraudulent mail-in ballots over the last several decades. The anonymous operative was checked out by the Post and is a real person who has worked on many campaigns in the Northeast. It is not impossible that this Democrat operative is simply trolling his political opponents and may be a real operative, but is trying to make a point about the gullibility of the opposition. But Hans von Spakovinsky, a senior legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation who manages the foundation's election law reform initiative, said, "There is nothing new about these techniques. Everything he is talking about is perfectly possible." The man requested anonymity out of fear of being prosecuted. His dirty work has taken him through the weeds of municipal and federal elections in Paterson, Atlantic City, Camden, Newark, Hoboken, and Hudson County. And his fingerprints can be found in local legislative, mayoral, and congressional races across the Garden State. Some of the biggest names and highest office holders in New Jersey have benefited from his tricks, according to campaign records the Post reviewed. An election that is swayed by 500 votes, 1,000 votes, it can make a difference. The tipster said it could be enough to flip the state. Despite assurances from Democrats and election experts, it's apparently ridiculously easy to submit hundreds, perhaps thousands, of fraudulent ballots. It starts with getting a blank ballot. The ballot has no specific security feature, like a stamp or a watermark. So the insider said he would just make his own ballots. "I just put the ballots to a copy machine, and it comes out the same way," the insider said. Election security officials will say that the ballot isn't enough. There are safeguards on the return envelope that cannot be duplicated. So to get around this insider would collect ballot envelopes from real voters. He would have his operatives fan out, going house to house, convincing voters to let them mail completed ballots on their behalf as a public service. The fraudster would then take the sealed envelopes home and hold them over boiling water. "You have to steam it to loosen the glue," said the insider. He would then remove the real ballot, place the counterfeit ballot inside the signed certificate, and reseal the envelope. But go ahead and listen to Democrats who tell you how secure your ballot is. This is virtually undiscoverable, which is why we constantly hear there is no evidence of mail-in ballot fraud. There's no evidence because fraudsters don't leave any evidence. Apparently, the operative and his crew get assistance from postal workers. You have a postman who is a rabid anti-Trump guy, and he's working in Bedminster or some Republican stronghold. He can take those filled out ballots, and knowing that 95% of them are going to be Republican, he can just throw them in the garbage. In some cases, mail carriers were members of his work crew and would sift ballots from the mail and hand them over to the operative. So this is what we're up against this year. The Democrats are using the coronavirus to require mail-in ballots. So what luck? The Democrats have a tough election to win, and they have used the COVID excuse to use a voting system that is prone to fraud and contested results. So even with this New York Post story, New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy has mandated mail-in voting in New Jersey. No one is allowed to go to the polls. And the Trump campaign has sued the state of New Jersey, claiming this is unnecessary and unconstitutional. It disenfranchises voters, prone to fraud. I believe the Trump campaign is suing three states for eliminating in-person voting, Nevada, Montana, and New Jersey. The Republican Senate candidate, Hirsch Singh, filed a complaint against the New Jersey Attorney General because his demand for a recount of ballots in two counties, which was required by law if requested, was ignored by the state attorney general. And for you insiders, the suspected reason why the New Jersey Attorney General is ignoring Singh is that if irregularities were found in the Singh's case, it would undermine Murphy's legal case to require mail-in voting in November. Well, those are just a few stories. I could be here all day updating you on recent stories regarding voter fraud. But here is what political minds believe is going on. The Democrats want to win this election, but it doesn't look good. It is very hard to beat an incumbent president, especially one as popular and successful as Trump. And their own candidate is horrible. It's not as if they have a young, winsome, you know, John F. Kennedy to run on the ticket. Biden is feeble. He makes too many gaffes. And his running mate, Kamala Harris, has a background just filled with scandals. So the Democrats are looking for every edge possible to win. And mail-in voting looks like that will be a plus for the Democrats. It may give them those few extra votes they need in the swing states. You know, it may involve their constituency cheating, but that accusation doesn't even need to be made. The real problem is that mail-in voting may create so many problems that this election can be delegitimized in the minds of many people and be tied up in the courts for months. This may just be another way for the Democrats to do what they said they were going to do after the 2016 election, resist at all costs. That this Republican president will not be their president. I was recently in a Zoom meeting with Katherine Engelbrandt. She is the founder of the national organization True the Vote. From the True the Vote website, quote, "Trouble is on the horizon. Radical leftist organizations are hard at work exploiting the weakness of our electoral process, actively promoting unqualified voters, harvesting mail-in ballots, lobbying for same-day voter registration, no voter ID requirements, non-citizen voting, and engaging in outright vote manipulation." Engelbrandt founded True the Vote back in 2009. The IRS under Lois Lerner denied their tax-exempt status. They were sued. They had a warehouse fire burn all of the records of a Houston election they were investigating. They were investigated under the Obama administration's FBI, the Department of Homeland Security, the ATF, the IRS. There were 23 audits from federal agencies. Congressman Elijah Cummings threatened them with criminal prosecution. And in this Zoom call, Engelbrandt said something very significant. She said, "We must have been incredibly close to something that they would be working so hard to stop us." Engelbrand also saw the Democrats earlier this year suing states for allowing in-person voting in view of COVID. This was all being spearheaded by the Democrat lawyer Mark Ellis. He served as the general counsel for Hillary Clinton in the 2016 campaign. The Democrats have 600 lawyers on retainer to sue states for inequities in mail-in voting, claiming that mail-in voting disenfranchises minorities. So it looks like they are creating the problem by requiring mail-in voting and then claiming to be fighting the problem created. It looks like a create chaos operation. Now, Republicans, seeing what's happening, have countered by hiring hundreds of lawyers who are also going to sue after the November elections. Have you noticed that there has been a big switch in reporting lately? Rather than usually Republicans claiming that Democrats are involved in voter fraud and the Democrats having to defend themselves, all of the Democrats and the left-leaning media are now claiming that Republicans are engaged in voter fraud, which is really an interesting change. Are the Democrats just trying to get ahead of the story by blaming the Republicans for what they themselves are doing? You decide. There are meetings where political leaders, insiders, will say things like, hey, we're going to be accused of fraud, so let's start talking about how the other party is involved in the voter fraud that we're involved in. I mean, that's how corrupt and evil our political leaders have become. Jeremiah chapter 8, everyone practices deceit. Oh, and by the way, you know also Democrats have created another scandal against the president, claiming that Trump has been manipulating mail-in voting by defunding the post office and limiting postal services. And so Congress held investigative hearings on this, questioning the head of the U.S. Postal Service, to which he said that these accusations are unfounded and outrageous. Also, CNN is playing a game right now, constantly claiming in story after story that Trump will not accept the election results and will not leave office. You know, maybe they're doing this to undermine any possible election fraud indictments after November 3rd. I mean, for CNN and left, we're not to view any revelations of cheating as wanting a fair election. It's simply to be viewed as Trump refusing to accept the election results. Anyway, let's look at some history, because there is an example of election fraud in American history that is so relevant to our current situation. Back in 1864, Lincoln was up for re-election. The war was winding down. The North was going to win. But still, the Democrats wanted to get rid of Lincoln. They wanted to compromise with the South, end the war, do away with the abolition of slavery. So they were engaging in election fraud to win the 1864 election. Now, to accommodate the troops who were far from home, the state of New York established a mail-in voting system. Soldiers would mail their ballots back home with four signatures: the voters, the recipient back home, a witness, and a Union officer. These ballots would be sealed and then sent by mail back to the soldier's hometown to be counted on Election Day. The New York governor at the time, Horatio Seymour, a Democrat, put a man named Moses Ferry in charge of overseeing the voting process of enlisted men in New York State. In Ferry's office, there was an assembly line of clerks forging signatures for all of the New York State regiments. And this was all discovered by Orville Wood, who was part of the Lincoln campaign. Wood claimed that he was a Democrat in order to get inside the Democrat operation. And Wood discovered that this was not just one man seeking a few votes for his favorite candidate. This was a huge operation. 20 co-conspirators were later named in the indictment. Even a Union general supplied names and addresses. He wrote, "Enclosed in this package, you will find tickets. Also a list of name of actual residents of Columbia County, now members of the 128th Regiment, my best wishes for your success. A sheriff from Albany wrote, offering to send additional men to help in the project. He wrote, all is well here, and we are confident of complete success. Also discovered in Moses Ferry's office was a list of 400 names of sick and wounded soldiers being treated in a nearby hospital. Ferry joked, dead or alive, they have all cast a good vote. And this event in history was covered in a recent article in the left-leaning Washington Post, of all places. To quote the article, Ferry and Donahue and their fellow co-conspirators found humor in their work. One accomplice mocked the outcry he expected from the abolitionist newspapers following the corruption of the election. The men bragged about their past successes in fixing local elections back home. Together, the men had shipped crates of fraudulent votes back to New York, but their scheme was over. Wood reported the operation to authorities. Ferry's office was searched, and on the morning of October 27, 1864, less than 2 weeks before the election, the voter fraud stood trial before a military commission. Now, here are some points we should take away from this event in history. First, when the fraud was exposed and the trial set, the Democrats tried to cover it up by saying that this was a conspiracy created by the Republicans to ensure Lincoln's election. Sound familiar? The left will always blame the right for their own corruption. Second, the election wasn't even close. Lincoln had 221 electoral votes, and McClellan, the Democrat, only had 21. But people will engage in fraud even when it's irrational and hopeless. Third, the people who were engaged in the fraud were, by all outward appearances, upstanding citizens. Those most people would never imagine would engage in this kind of cheating. One of the main Democratic operatives in this scheme, Edward Donahue, he pleaded for mercy from the court because he was a young man, newly married, and had no previous record. And fourth, note the seriousness of this crime. This crime undermined the entire American system of democracy. This was treason. The judge in the case stated, these men have engaged in one of the most gigantic frauds ever attempted in America, a fraud which, if it had been successful, will, in my opinion, have produced a disruption of our entire country, and our war for the preservation of the Union will be practically at an end and futile. The New York Times wrote in 1864, the honest electors of the state of New York have escaped an extensive and fearful fraud, a fraud in keeping with the proclivities of the party in whose behalf it was initiated, but one that, if unexposed, might have subverted the honest will of the people and left the state and the nation at the mercy of those who would make peace with rebellion and fellowship with traitors. Notice from this article in 1864 that it stated that fraud was a proclivity of the Democratic Party. It was built into the party's godless ideology. So the two men who oversaw this mail-in ballot fraud, Moses Ferry and Edward Donahue, received life in prison. Now, consider that this whole event took place back in 1864, when most people attended church. A day in which we think that there was at least some higher degree of morality. So don't think for a moment that election fraud doesn't exist today, even more in our day. And evil always cheats to get ahead. So when we hear politicians laughing at the possibility of election fraud in the United States, of which I could quote many Democrats saying there's no such thing as election fraud, they are laughing and denying it because they're covering it up. Everyone knows that it's there. The Democrats know it. The Republicans know it. This is the condition of human nature. If people can cheat, they will cheat. Now, what does the Bible say about voter fraud? Well, in the Bible, the theocratic system of kings did not operate on the vote of majority, but there was still plenty of cheating. like Abimelech in Judges chapter 9, who killed 70 of his brothers so that he could become king. Or Absalom, who lied to the people so that he could overthrow his father and he become king. Or the evil queen Athaliah and her supporters in 2 Kings chapter 11, who murdered all of the royal family so that she could rule Israel without any competition. So there are plenty of examples of biblical characters who cheated to obtain power. But the real problem is not failing the will of the people, but refusing to follow the will of God, a refusal to discern and accept the ruler that God has chosen. And ultimately, this rebellion against God's chosen one culminates in people rejecting the one anointed of God, the Messiah, Jesus Christ, the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords. Show me a man who cheats an election, and I will show you a man who rejects the authority of Jesus Christ. The Old Testament speaks often about people not receiving the Lord's anointed, whether that be the prophet or the king or the Messiah to come. Psalm chapter 2, verse 2, the kings of the earth take their stand, and the rulers take counsel together against the Lord and against his anointed. But beyond these scriptural examples of people cheating to win, we also have the words of the prophets concerning the dishonesty in Israel in the days of Israel's moral decline, such as Jeremiah chapter 9, verse 3, they bend their tongue like the bow, lies and not truth prevail in the land, for they proceed from evil to evil, and they do not know me. Or Micah chapter 7, verse 3, concerning evil, both hands do it well. The prince asks and also the judge for a bribe, and the great man speaks the desire of his soul, so they weave it together. Jeremiah chapter 8, verse 10, because from the least of them, even to the greatest, everyone is greedy for gain. From the prophet, even to the priest, everyone practices deceit. So those are some very sobering verses reminding us not to be naive, but to understand human depravity. Then in regard to voter fraud, there is also the biblical command regarding fair measurement and counting. Proverbs chapter 20, verse 10, differing weights and differing measurements, both of them are an abomination to the Lord. Then Proverbs chapter 20, verse 23, differing weights are an abomination to the Lord, and a false scale is not good. Amos 8, 5, to cheat with dishonest scales. You know, this is where the butcher puts his finger on the scale to increase his gain, but it also applies to politics and voting. To cheat on any measuring is an abomination to the Lord. Deuteronomy 25, you shall not have in your bag differing weights, a large and a small. You shall not have in your house differing measuring, a large and a small. You shall have a full and just weight. You shall have a full and just measure, that your days may be prolonged in the land which the Lord your God gives you. For everyone who does these things, everyone who acts unjustly, is an abomination to the Lord your God. People who cheat think it's no big deal, but not so. It is an abomination. Proverbs chapter 16, verse 11, a just balance and scales belong to the Lord. All the weights of the bag are God's concern. So we need to remind people that God is serious, that God sees, that he judges. Whenever you cheat in life, whatever you get to yourself by cheating will be cursed of God. You'll be living outside the will of God. Even the patriarch Jacob cheated his brother Esau, thinking he was going to get ahead. And it put Jacob in a place of misery for the next 14 years working for Laban. And Jacob's dishonesty resulted in his sons becoming crooked themselves. And at the end of Jacob's life, he said to the Pharaoh of Egypt, "Few and unpleasant have been the years of my life." What a terrible testimony for a man who is supposed to represent God to this world. I don't know where I ever got this in my head, but as a young man, I would rather take an F on a test than to cheat. Because somehow I knew that if I cheated to get ahead, whatever benefit I received would be cursed. Whether that be a grade, an acceptance into a school, a job, a wife. If I cheated to get it, it would not be blessed. If I cheated on my taxes just to get a few more dollars, I knew that God would get it out of my hide some way, somehow. If you cheat, whatever you get will not be the will of God, and you're going to regret it. The punishment for sin is far greater than any short-term benefits you get from sin. Proverbs chapter 19, verse 5, a false witness will not go unpunished, and he who tells lies will not escape. Or Proverbs 21, 6, the acquisition of treasure by a lying tongue is a fleeting vapor, the pursuit of death. Or how about the old slogan, winners never cheat and cheaters never win? It's more true than most people care to admit, because there is a judge in heaven. So in regard to politics, if you have to cheat for your candidate to win, that candidate or that party will be your curse. This is something most people in their spiritual ignorance, you know, never realize. They only think about winning, that the ends justify the means. But any person or party that uses cheating to win will have no problem turning around and cheating you in some way once they're in office. Now, by way of conclusion, evil will always cheat to win. If you want a good analysis of how this worked, David Kapelian has written two books on the subject. First, The Marketing of Evil, and then 5 years later, he came out with the book, How Evil Works. Remember that rather than going through the democratic process, the left used the courts to legalize abortion and homosexual marriage in America. Have you ever looked at the congressional districts, how they're formed to move voters around to ensure the win of a particular political party? On the left is the New Jersey voting districts, and they don't follow the neat blocks of the New Jersey counties, pictured on the right. My district, District 12, runs as a thin line across the entire state in order to group together Republican voters so they don't have an effect on the Democrat strongholds. This is cheating. If New Jersey followed county lines, the Democrats would not control both houses of the New Jersey legislature. Now, Democrats claim that they're doing this so that Democratic voters in certain areas are not disenfranchised. Well, that's just a nice way of saying so that Democrats can win. Unprincipled, unethical people will always cheat. That is, as long as there's a righteous minority or even citizenship, a citizenship that operates on common sense and self-preservation. You know, I've always imagined that even the Antichrist, when he comes to power, is going to have to cheat. And that's what we read in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, that he will come with lying signs and wonders in order to get into power. Or, as it says in the prophetic book of Daniel, he will come by the power of intrigue. But let's think a little bit deeper about this. A day is coming when evil will not have to cheat so much in regard to democracy. Evil will actually be in the majority. I mean, it's not as if the majority vote is the answer to having righteousness in this world. In the Revelation, we read that all the world goes after the Antichrist. And I'm sure if a vote is taken in the apocalypse, the Antichrist and his government would win the majority. Someday be prepared for the fact that democracy will favor the Antichrist and the Antichrist spirit. Now, from God's perspective, that's still cheating, because the world is not voting for righteousness. They have set up a system by which they can vote against Christ and his truth. The collective will of man doesn't make for truth. But from a human point of view, it will not look like cheating. It will be evil by democracy. But until that day comes, evil will always try to get that extra 2 to 5% of the vote by cheating, because most elections, especially presidential elections, are won by a very slim margin. And the divide between those who want to follow God's natural law and those who believe law is a function of human choice is now right down the middle. And with that, the incentive for evil people to cheat is huge. But here's an encouraging verse. Daniel chapter 7, verse 22. The Ancient of Days came, and judgment was passed in favor of the saints of the Highest One. And the time arrived when the saints took possession of the kingdom. God casts the deciding vote. You don't need the majority of people in this world to win. All you need is to be on God's side, because you and God make a majority. Psalm chapter 2, verse 6, but as for me, I have installed my king on Mount Zion, my holy mount. Jesus has already declared the winner. So thank you for making God and country a part of your discipleship in the Word. Don't forget to like, to share, leave a comment below, subscribe. It doesn't cost you anything to subscribe. All it does is put the latest God and country program on your front page when you go to YouTube. It helps our creds. Until next time, keep the faith. Stand firm in the Lord. God is with us. May Jesus Christ reign.